Are new financial regulations hurting small community banks?
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. One of the first items on the agenda for congressional Republicans when they get back from their 4th of July break will be to shine a spotlight on what they call the onerous burdens of Wall Street reform, as in the Dodd-Frank regulatory overhaul of the financial sector. The law was meant to correct problems that led to the 2008 financial meltdown. But House Republicans say the new regulations are hurting small community banks far from Wall Street. Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji has more.
David Schweikert is on the House Financial Services Committee. The Arizona Republican says Dodd-Frank's new rules are scaring community bankers in his district.
They're hedging. They're holding back capital.
Frank Sorrentino, chairman and CEO of North Jersey Community Bank, says that's true.
Of course we want to lend, but the issue is, you know, we may have our hands somewhat tied for fear of where these regulations are going.
He's worried rules meant to rein in big banks could hurt small banks like his.
Like any members of an industry that's about to endure new regulations, they're skeptical and nervous, and that's very understandable.
Robert Jackson helped the Obama administration draft some of the provisions that eventually became Dodd-Frank. He says the act was written with small banks in mind.
And so they exempted small banks from many of the most important provisions of Dodd-Frank. But the bottom line is it's far too soon to tell.
You see, this month marks Dodd-Frank's second anniversary, and many of the regulations have yet to be enacted. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
Now to London, where today the news isn't about cutting back, but rather building up. Europe's tallest skyscraper is opening today on the south bank of the Thames River. It's called the Shard, as in a shard of glass, and it's more than 1,000 feet tall. Now the challenge will be filling it up, as the BBC's John Bithrie reports.
The Shard has completely changed London's traditionally low-rise skyline. This elongated glass pyramid contains a hotel, apartments and office space, as well as the best views in Britain. But many Londoners see it as a symbol of the greed and excess in the years before the financial crisis. And others simply think it's out of place, like Simon Jenkins, a well-known journalist and author.
It's a beautiful building. It would look wonderful in Dubai. I think it has very little to do with the architecture or the language of London. It's a statement, it's a gesture, it's a sort of virility symbol. It really has no place, I think, in the language of London development and planning over the centuries.
The Shard nearly didn't get built. When the crash came, the project went off the rails. It was saved by a group of investors from Qatar. But when they'll get their $200 million investment back isn't clear. Demand for office space in central London is weak, so much of this iconic building is likely to stay empty for some time to come. In London, I'm the BBC's John Bithrie for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mostly higher in global trading this morning, up about 0.5% right now in Frankfurt and in Hong Kong. Starting today, Taco Bell is getting a little fancier, a little more like Chipotle, you might say. The chain is introducing its new gourmet-style Cantina Bell menu. Think $5 for a burrito instead of two. Wall Street was closed for the holiday yesterday. On Tuesday, the Dow added 72 points to close at 12,943. That is the highest close since May 7th.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Well, I was in Boston yesterday and saw the U.S. Navy's Blue Angels fly over the harbor, which was filled with hundreds of party boats celebrating the 4th. Then off to the side, there was the USS Constitution, the oldest commissioned warship afloat in the world. It was first launched back in 1797. And the late 1700s are where we will go next. We're going to take a look back now at economic independence throughout American history with Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, let's go right back to the beginning of the Republic, Chris. How did we interact with the rest of the world economically back in the late 18th century?
So we're back at the George Washington administration, and it was a major debate, Jeremy. So on one hand, you had Treasury Secretary Hamilton, and he wanted to take tariffs, you know, a tax, a fee on imported goods. And he didn't want to discriminate against anybody. Keep the tariffs low, and let's trade with all kinds of nations. On the other side, you had Thomas Jefferson, Secretary of State, and his congressional ally, James Madison. And they felt that the United States, we were politically independent of Britain, but we're economically too dependent on them. So they wanted to have higher tariffs. George Washington, he ruled in favor of Hamilton. So it was an important step in this notion of we're economically interdependent with the rest of the world. We want to trade with the rest of the world, and we don't want to discriminate against particular nations.
And how did that trend continue as we got into the 19th century in American history?
Yeah, you know, it's really, you know, the United States is part of this global economy and it's kind of shifted in certain ways. But take a look at the railroad. I mean, economic history is fascinating, and it's the railroad that united the United States economically. Well, yeah, half the total bonds issued by the railroad companies owned by foreigners, a quarter of the stock. So foreign capital really built the U.S. railroad system, in other words, foreign capital, united the nation.
Well, and foreign capital is still incredibly important. The Chinese are some of our biggest bondholders. What happened with that coming into the 20th century, Chris?
Well, you mentioned, you know, foreign capital, Chinese bondholders. Well, what about human capital, knowledge, experience? So the story, the secret ingredient of U.S. growth in the latter part of the 20th century, early 21st century, is immigrants. Take a look at Silicon Valley. Half of all startups were founded by immigrants. Wander through cities, and you'll see neighborhoods that have been revived by immigrant entrepreneurs. So I think we still have an interdependent economy.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks as always, and happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July to you.
And finally, to that big scientific discovery that was announced yesterday, the Higgs boson. It's a subatomic particle, also known as the missing cornerstone of physics. I'll let you look it up if you want to know more, because I actually had to read the articles a few times to understand exactly what it is. But while it's being called a huge win for science, it was a loss for physicist Stephen Hawking. He told the BBC he had made a bet with a colleague that the particle would not be found, and now he is out $100. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.